Part 2. Transformation of Money into Capital. Chapter 4. The General Formula for Capital. The circulation of commodities is the starting point of capital. The production of commodities, their circulation, and that more developed form of their circulation called commerce, these form the historical groundwork from which it rises. The modern history of capital dates from the creation in the 16th century of a world embracing commerce and a world embracing market. If we abstract from the material substance of the circulation of commodities, that is, from the exchange of the various use values, and consider only the economic forms produced by this process of circulation, we find its final result to be money. This final product of the circulation of commodities is the first form in which capital appears. As a matter of history, capital, as opposed to landed property, invariably takes the form at first of money. It appears as moneyed wealth, as the capital of the merchant and of the usurer. Footnote. The contrast between the power, based on the personal relations of dominion and servitude, that is conferred by landed property, and the impersonal power that is given by money, is well expressed by two French proverbs. Nulle terre sans seigneur, and l'argent n'a pas de maître. No land without its lord, and money has no master. End of footnote. But we have no need to refer to the origin of capital in order to discover that the first form of appearance of capital is money. We can see it daily under our very eyes. All new capital, to commence with, comes on the stage, that is, on the market, whether of commodities, labour, or money, even in our days, in the shape of money that by a definite process has to be transformed into capital. The first distinction we notice between money that is money only and money that is capital is nothing more than a difference in their form of circulation. The simplest form of the circulation of commodities is commodity to money to commodity, the transformation of commodities into money and the change of the money back again into commodities, or selling in order to buy. But alongside of this form, we find another specifically different form, money to commodity to money, the transformation of money into commodities, and the change of commodities back again into money, or buying in order to sell. Money that circulates in the latter manner is thereby transformed into, becomes, capital, and is already potentially capital. Now let us examine the circuit money to commodity to money a little closer. It consists, like the other, of two antithetical phases. In the first phase, money to commodity, or the purchase, the money is changed into a commodity. In the second phase, commodity to money, or the sale, the commodity is changed back again into money. The combination of these two phases constitutes the single movement whereby money is exchanged for a commodity, and the same commodity is again exchanged for money, whereby a commodity is bought in order to be sold, or, neglecting the distinction in form between buying and selling, whereby a commodity is bought with money, and then money is bought with a commodity. Footnote. With money one buys commodities, and with commodities one buys money. Mercier de la Rivière, L'ordre naturel et essentiel des sociétés politiques. End of footnote. The result, in which the phases of the process vanish, is the exchange of money for money, money to money. If I purchase 2,000 pounds of cotton for £100, and resell the 2,000 pounds of cotton for £110, I have in fact exchanged £100 for £110, money for money. Now it is evident that the circuit money to commodity to money would be absurd and without meaning if the intention were to exchange by this means two equal sums of money, £100 for £100. The miser's plan would be far simpler and surer. He sticks to his £100 instead of exposing it to the dangers of circulation. And yet, whether the merchant who has paid £100 for his cotton sells it for £110, or lets it go for £100, or even £50, his money has, at all events, gone through a characteristic and original movement, quite different in kind from that which it goes through in the hands of the peasant, who sells corn, and with the money thus set free buys clothes. We have therefore to examine first the distinguishing characteristics of the forms of the circuits money to commodity to money, and commodity to money to commodity, and in doing this the real difference that underlies the mere difference of form will reveal itself. Let us see in the first place what the two forms have in common. Both circuits are resolvable into the same two antithetical phases, commodity to money, a sale, and money to commodity, a purchase. In each of these phases, the same material elements, a commodity and money, and the same economic dramatis personae, a buyer and a seller, confront one another. Each circuit is the unity of the same two antithetical phases, and in each case this unity is brought about by the intervention of three contracting parties, of whom one only sells, one only buys, while the third both buys and sells. What, however, first and foremost distinguishes the circuit commodity to money to commodity from the circuit money to commodity to money is the inverted order of succession of the two phases. The simple circulation of commodities begins with a sale and ends with a purchase, while the circulation of money as capital begins with a purchase and ends with a sale. In the one case, both the starting point and the goal are commodities. In the other, they are money. In the first form, the movement is brought about by the intervention of money, in the second, by that of a commodity. In the circulation commodity to money to commodity, the money is in the end converted into a commodity that serves as a use value. It is spent once and for all. In the inverted form, money to commodity to money, on the contrary, the buyer lays out money in order that, as a seller, he may recover money. By the purchase of his commodity, he throws money into circulation, in order to withdraw it again by the sale of the same commodity. He lets the money go, but only with the sly intention of getting it back again. The money, therefore, is not spent, it is merely advanced. Footnote. When a thing is bought in order to be sold again, the sum employed is called money advanced. When it is bought not to be sold, it may be said to be expended. James Stewart, Works, etc. Edited by General Sir James Stewart, his son, 1805. End of footnote. In the circuit commodity to money to commodity, the same piece of money changes its place twice. The seller gets it from the buyer and pays it away to another seller. The complete circulation, which begins with the receipt, concludes with the payment of money for commodities. It is the very contrary in the circuit money to commodity to money. Here it is not the piece of money that changes its place twice, but the commodity. The buyer takes it from the hands of the seller and passes it into the hands of another buyer. Just as in the simple circulation of commodities, the double change of place of the same piece of money effects its passage from one hand into another, so here the double change of place of the same commodity brings about the reflux of the money to its point of departure. Such reflux is not dependent on the commodity being sold for more than was paid for it. This circumstance influences only the amount of the money that comes back. The reflux itself takes place so soon as the purchased commodity is resold. In other words, so soon as the circuit money to commodity to money is completed. We have here, therefore, a palpable difference between the circulation of money as capital and its circulation as mere money. The circuit commodity to money to commodity comes completely to an end so soon as the money brought in by the sale of one commodity is abstracted again by the purchase of another. If, nevertheless, there follows a reflux of money to its starting point, this can only happen through a renewal or repetition of the operation. If I sell a quarter of corn for £3, and with this £3 buy clothes, the money, so far as I am concerned, is spent and done with. It belongs to the clothes merchant. If I now sell a quarter of corn, money indeed flows back to me, not, however, as a sequel to the first transaction, but in consequence of its repetition. The money again leaves me, so soon as I complete this second transaction by a fresh purchase. Therefore, in the circuit commodity to money to commodity, the expenditure of money has nothing to do with its reflux. On the other hand, in money to commodity to money, the reflux of the money is conditioned by the very mode of its expenditure. Without this reflux, the operation fails or the process is interrupted and incomplete, owing to the absence of its complementary and final phase, the sale. The circuit commodity to money to commodity starts with one commodity and finishes with another, which falls out of circulation and into consumption. Consumption, the satisfaction of wants in one word use value, is its end and aim. The circuit money to commodity to money, on the contrary, commences with money and ends with money. Its leading motive, and the goal that attracts it, is therefore mere exchange value. In the simple circulation of commodities, the two extremes of the circuit have the same economic form. They are both commodities, and commodities of equal value. But they are also use values, differing in their qualities, as, for example, corn and clothes. The exchange of products of the different materials in which the labour of society is embodied forms here the basis of the movement. It is otherwise in the circulation money to commodity to money, which at first sight appears purposeless because tautological. Both extremes have the same economic form. They are both money, and therefore are not qualitatively different use values. For money is but the converted form of commodities, in which their particular use values vanish. To exchange £100 for cotton, and then this same cotton again for £100, is merely a roundabout way of exchanging money for money, the same for the same, and appears to be an operation just as purposeless as it is absurd. Footnote. One does not exchange money for money, says Mercier de la Rivière to the mercantilists. In a work which ex professo treats of trade and speculation, occurs the following. All trade consists in the exchange of things of different kinds, and the advantage, to the merchant, arises out of this difference. To exchange a pound of bread against a pound of bread would be attended with no advantage. Hence, trade is advantageously contrasted with gambling, which consists in a mere exchange of money for money. Thomas Corbett, An Inquiry into the Causes and Modes of the Wealth of Individuals, or the Principles of Trade and Speculation Explained, London, 1841. Although Corbett does not see that money to money, the exchange of money for money, is the characteristic form of circulation not only of merchants' capital, but of all capital, yet at least he acknowledges that this form is common to gambling and to one species of trade, viz. Speculation. But then comes McCulloch, and makes out that to buy in order to sell is to speculate. And thus the difference between speculation and trade vanishes. Every transaction in which an individual buys produce in order to sell it again is, in fact, a speculation. McCulloch, A Dictionary Practical, etc. of Commerce, 1847. With much more naivety, Pinto, the Pindar of the Amsterdam Stock Exchange, remarks, "Trade is a game, and nothing can be won from beggars. If one won everything from everybody all the time, it would be necessary to give back the greater part of the profit voluntarily, in order to begin the game again." Pinto, Traité de la Circulation et du Crédit, 1771. End of footnote. One sum of money is distinguishable from another only by its amount. The character and tendency of the process money to commodity to money is therefore not due to any qualitative difference between its extremes, both being money, but solely to their quantitative difference. More money is withdrawn from circulation at the finish than was thrown into it at the start. The cotton that was bought for £100 is perhaps resold for £100 plus £10, or £110. The exact form of this process is therefore money to commodity to incremented money, where incremented money equals money plus increment, equals the original sum advanced plus an increment. This increment or excess over the original value I call surplus value. The value originally advanced, therefore, not only remains intact while in circulation, but adds to itself a surplus value or expands itself. It is this movement that converts it into capital. Of course, it is also possible that in commodity to money to commodity, the two extremes commodity to commodity, say corn and clothes, may represent different quantities of value. The farmer may sell his corn above its value, or may buy clothes at less than their value. He may, on the other hand, be done by the clothes merchant. Yet, in the form of circulation now under consideration, such differences in value are purely accidental. The fact that the corn and the clothes are equivalents does not deprive the process of all meaning, as it does in money to commodity to money. The equivalence of their values is rather a necessary condition to its normal course. The repetition or renewal of the act of selling in order to buy is kept within bounds by the very object it aims at, namely, consumption or the satisfaction of definite wants, an aim that lies altogether outside the sphere of circulation. But when we buy in order to sell, we, on the contrary, begin and end with the same thing, money, exchange value. And thereby the movement becomes interminable. No doubt M becomes M plus increment. £100 become £110. But when viewed in their qualitative aspect alone, £110 are the same as £100, namely money, and, considered quantitatively, £110 is, like £100, a sum of definite and limited value. If now the £110 be spent as money, they cease to play their part. They are no longer capital. Withdrawn from circulation, they become petrified into a hoard, and though they remained in that state till doomsday, not a single farthing would accrue to them. If, then, the expansion of value is once aimed at, there is just the same inducement to augment the value of the £110 as that of the £100, for both are but limited expressions for exchange value, and therefore both have the same vocation to approach, by quantitative increase, as near as possible to absolute wealth. Momentarily, indeed, the value originally advanced, the £100, is distinguishable from the surplus value of £10 that is annexed to it during circulation, but the distinction vanishes immediately. At the end of the process, we do not receive with one hand the original £100 and with the other the surplus value of £10, we simply get a value of £110, which is in exactly the same condition and fitness for commencing the expanding process as the original £100 was. Money ends the movement only to begin it again. Footnote. Capital is divisible into the original capital and the profit, the increment to the capital. Although in practice this profit is immediately turned into capital and set in motion with the original. Friedrich Engels, Umrisse zu einer Kritik der Nationalökonomie, in Deutsch-Französische Jahrbücher, herausgegeben von Arnold Ruger und Karl Marx, 1844. End of footnote. Therefore, the final result of every separate circuit, in which a purchase and consequent sale are completed, forms of itself the starting point of a new circuit. The simple circulation of commodities, selling in order to buy, is a means of carrying out a purpose unconnected with circulation, namely the appropriation of use values, the satisfaction of wants. The circulation of money as capital is, on the contrary, an end in itself, for the expansion of value takes place only within this constantly renewed movement. The circulation of capital has therefore no limits. Footnote. Aristotle opposes économique to crematistic. He starts from the former. So far as it is the art of gaining a livelihood, it is limited to procuring those articles that are necessary to existence, and useful either to a household or the state. True wealth consists of such values in use, for the quantity of possessions of this kind, capable of making life pleasant, is not unlimited. There is, however, a second mode of acquiring things, to which we may, by preference and with correctness, give the name of crematistic, and in this case there appear to be no limits to riches and possessions. Trade, a capellica is literally retail trade, and Aristotle takes this kind because in it values in use predominate, does not in its nature belong to crematistic, for here the exchange has reference only to what is necessary to themselves, the buyer or seller. Therefore, as he goes on to show, the original form of trade was barter, but with the extension of the latter, there arose the necessity for money. On the discovery of money, barter of necessity developed into capellica, into trading in commodities, and this again, in opposition to its original tendency, grew into crematistic, into the art of making money. Now, crematistic is distinguishable from economic in this way, that in the case of crematistic, circulation is the source of riches, and it appears to revolve about money, for money is the beginning and end of this kind of exchange. Therefore also riches, such as crematistic strives for, are unlimited. Just as every art that is not a means to an end but an end in itself has no limit to its aims because it seeks constantly to approach nearer and nearer to that end, while those arts that pursue means to an end are not boundless, since the goal itself imposes a limit upon them, so with crematistic, there are no bounds to its aims, these aims being absolute wealth. Economic, not crematistic, has a limit. The object of the former is something different from money, of the latter the augmentation of money. By confounding these two forms, which overlap each other, some people have been led to look upon the preservation and increase of money ad infinitum as the end and aim of economic. Aristoteles, De Rep. End of footnote. As the conscious representative of this movement, the possessor of money becomes a capitalist. His person, or rather his pocket, is the point from which the money starts and to which it returns. The expansion of value, which is the objective basis or mainspring of the circulation money to commodity to money, becomes his subjective aim. And it is only in so far as the appropriation of ever more and more wealth in the abstract becomes the sole motive of his operations that he functions as a capitalist, that is, as capital personified and endowed with consciousness and a will. Footnote. Commodities, here used in the sense of use values, are not the terminating object of the trading capitalist. Money is his terminating object. T. Chalmers, On Political Economy, etc., 1832. End of footnote. Use values must therefore never be looked upon as the real aim of the capitalist, neither must the profit on any single transaction. The restless, never-ending process of profit-making alone is what he aims at. Footnote. The merchant counts the money he has made as almost nothing. He always looks to the future. A. Genovese, Lezioni di Economia Civile, 1765, Custodi's edition of Italian Economists, Parte Moderna. End of footnote. Footnote. The inextinguishable passion for gain, the auri sacra fames, will always lead capitalists. McCulloch, The Principles of Political Economy, 1830. This view, of course, does not prevent the same McCulloch and others of his kidney, when in theoretical difficulties, such, for example, as the question of overproduction, from transforming the same capitalist into a moral citizen, whose sole concern is for use values, and who even develops an insatiable hunger for boots, hats, eggs, calico, and other extremely familiar sorts of use values. End of footnote. This boundless greed after riches, this passionate chase after exchange value, is common to the capitalist and the miser. But while the miser is merely a capitalist gone mad, the capitalist is a rational miser. The never-ending augmentation of exchange value, which the miser strives after by seeking to save his money from circulation, is attained by the more acute capitalist by constantly throwing it afresh into circulation. Footnote. That infinity which things do not possess, they possess in circulation. Galliani. End of footnote. The independent form, that is, the money form, which the value of commodities assumes in the case of simple circulation, serves only one purpose, namely their exchange, and vanishes in the final result of the movement. On the other hand, in the circulation money to commodity to money, both the money and the commodity represent only different modes of existence of value itself. The money, its general mode, and the commodity its particular, or, so to say, disguised mode. Footnote. It is not matter which makes capital, but the value of that matter. J. B. Say, Traité d'économie politique, 1817. End of footnote. It is constantly changing from one form to the other without thereby becoming lost, and thus assumes an automatically active character. If we now take in turn each of the two different forms which self-expanding value successively assumes in the course of its life, we then arrive at these two propositions. Capital is money. Capital is commodities. Footnote. Currency employed in producing articles is capital. MacLeod, The Theory and Practice of Banking, 1855. Capital is commodities. James Mill, Elements of Political Economy, 1821. End of footnote. In truth, however, value is here the active factor in a process in which, while constantly assuming the form in turn of money and commodities, it at the same time changes in magnitude, differentiates itself by throwing off surplus value from itself. The original value, in other words, expands spontaneously. For the movement, in the course of which it adds surplus value, is its own movement. Its expansion, therefore, is automatic expansion. Because it is value, it has acquired the occult quality of being able to add value to itself. It brings forth living offspring, or at least lays golden eggs. Value, therefore, being the active factor in such a process, and assuming at one time the form of money, at another that of commodities, but through all these changes preserving itself and expanding, it requires some independent form by means of which its identity may at any time be established. And this form it possesses only in the shape of money. It is under the form of money that value begins and ends, and begins again, every act of its own spontaneous generation. It began by being £100, it is now £110, and so on. But the money itself is only one of the two forms of value. Unless it takes the form of some commodity, it does not become capital. There is here no antagonism, as in the case of hoarding, between the money and commodities. The capitalist knows that all commodities, however scurvy they may look, or however badly they may smell, are in faith and in truth money, inwardly circumcised Jews, and what is more, a wonderful means whereby out of money to make more money. In simple circulation, commodity to money to commodity, the value of commodities attained at most a form independent of their use values, that is, the form of money. But that same value, now in the circulation money to commodity to money, or the circulation of capital, suddenly presents itself as an independent substance, endowed with a motion of its own, passing through a life process of its own, in which money and commodities are mere forms which it assumes and casts off in turn. Nay, more. Instead of simply representing the relations of commodities, it enters now, so to say, into private relations with itself. It differentiates itself as original value from itself as surplus value. As the Father differentiates himself from himself qua the Son, yet both are one and of one age. For only by the surplus value of £10 does the £100 originally advanced become capital, and so soon as this takes place, so soon as the Son, and by the Son the Father, is begotten, so soon does their difference vanish, and they again become one. £110. Value therefore now becomes value in process, money in process, and, as such, capital. It comes out of circulation, enters into it again, preserves and multiplies itself within its circuit, comes back out of it with expanded bulk, and begins the same round ever afresh. Money to incremented money, money which begets money, such is the description of capital from the mouths of its first interpreters, the mercantilists. Buying in order to sell, or more accurately, buying in order to sell dearer, money to commodity to incremented money, appears certainly to be a form peculiar to one kind of capital alone, namely merchants' capital. But industrial capital, too, is money that is changed into commodities and by the sale of these commodities is reconverted into more money. The events that take place outside the sphere of circulation, in the interval between the buying and the selling, do not affect the form of this movement. Lastly, in the case of interest-bearing capital, the circulation money to commodity to incremented money appears abridged. We have its result without the intermediate stage, in the form money to incremented money, en style lapidaire, so to say. Money that is worth more money, value that is greater than itself. Money to commodity to incremented money is therefore in reality the general formula of capital, as it appears prima facie within the sphere of circulation.